Hey there, I want to take a quick second to thank you for listening to the Focus Point podcast. I hope that you find a blessing and encouragement through this episode. I hope that you'll share the episode with your family and your friends. If this is one of your first times catching us, or if you want to find out more about us, or if you want to listen to other episodes, please visit thepointoffocus.com, and there you will find our podcast archive as well as more information. Once again, that's thepointoffocus.com, and once again, I thank you for listening to this episode. Well, we are returning to our series, Journey to the Promised Land. Today, I'm excited to be back in it after our little special episode called Ocean last week. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that, I encourage you to go back and listen to that as I shared something that God shared with me while I was on vacation. So if you want to check that out, it's available in our archives, and I hope you will. And so, as I said, we're returning into this series, Journey to the Promised Land. If you have a copy of the Bible, I think it's okay to grab it now, whether it's paper or electronic. Go ahead, get it open. We'll be in Leviticus 16 today. We'll be in a couple other places, but I think right now, mainly, we're going to start in Leviticus 16, and we're going to kind of see where we end up, but I'll let you know as we go on. The reason for that is we are kind of doing a big flyover look at Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And as I've said before, when we kind of do this type of stuff, this isn't a in-depth, deep dive look, kind of like we did with Genesis and Exodus. And even Genesis and Exodus, we kind of went around some things and whatnot. So this is kind of the same thing, but it's going to feel way different as we kind of look at an over kind of big view of Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and we'll kind of dive in to some certain points in the books as we go through them to kind of get a picture of where Israel is, kind of where it is, and our theme, you know, Journey to the Promised Land, as we're kind of going with Israel in this and seeing how their journey applies to our own life and what we can get out of that. And I believe God has something for us too in this, as we kind of see what happens, especially with Israel and with Moses. I believe God really has something for us to kind of help us through as we continue to go toward our promised land. And the reason we're calling it that is sometimes promised lands can be our dreams or our goals. And the goal for Israel was to get to the land that God had shown Abraham, get to the land that God had promised them and all of that. And we're going to see through this episode, they kind of get right on the threshold and stuff happens. And we're going to kind of dive into that a little bit. And also, we're going to kind of see our theme of faith kind of come through as we look at these different things. But we're going to start in the book of Leviticus because we're going to call back to something I mentioned several episodes ago now a little bit as we looked at the 10 plagues in Egypt, and that final plague had an event that now kind of revisit as God sets up something for forgiveness of sin. But first, let's kind of look at like an overview of kind of what these books are about. Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers actually kind of go together, and they're not like highly defined at what is happening, like, I mean, where they take place and stuff like that, because they are all about God forming this nation of Israel. And so Exodus, as we know, like, they were slaves in the first half, God frees them, and then the second half, they are having their faith tested with God. They're learning how to trust God, that God will provide for them. And we looked at that toward the end of the Exodus series, as we saw how God provided for them. It may not be what they wanted, but it was what they needed. And we really focused in and talked about that. And so they were enslaved in Egypt, then God delivered them, and then at Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments and all of that. So that kind of all took place in the book of Exodus. And as I said, they're not sharply shown kind of where these things take place, but the books of Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers are all kind of surrounding this event at Mount Sinai, and later on kind of where God is telling them this all comes to a place where they're just getting these instructions and these guidelines that God wants them to be a separate nation. And the location for this, as I said, is Mount Sinai in Leviticus. I mean, in the second half of Exodus. Remember, we got the Ten Commandments there. And then Leviticus and a little bit of Numbers. Okay? So this event is all kind of happening in the area of Mount Sinai, where they are getting these instructions from God. And so this is where we are. Okay. So now what do I mean by that? Okay. So in the book of Leviticus, probably mainly the book of Leviticus right now, kind of where we are. So the last little bit of Exodus, as we kind of talked about in that last episode a couple weeks ago in the Exodus series, now we've got Leviticus, which also kind of spells out these guidelines. There was other nations around, and God wanted Israel to be his people. God wanted Israel to stand out. So if other nations were doing this, God wanted them to do that. Pretty much the opposite of what everybody else was doing. So they would be seen as different. They would be set apart. It's kind of like the theme of Leviticus. And I encourage you to read Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy on your own and kind of get the full view of them. But that's kind of what's happening. It's God restating even maybe and some bringing in some new words for them. So that's happening here in the book of Leviticus. It is written by Moses. And well, it's believed to be Moses, but it's widely believed that Moses wrote these first five books of the New Testament. I'm sorry, New Testament of the Old Testament. Obviously, it was written to Israel, and then the Israelites are receiving instructions from God at the base of Mount Sinai. So it's kind of like this continued event that is happening at the base of Mount Sinai. But what I want to look at here is not all of that as much as some of the laws and the rules and the stuff that God gave Israel was Israel specific, meaning that some of that stuff, like, it's not cultural to us anymore. It's not not going to say important, but it's not, we don't do some of the things anyway anymore. Like, culture has shifted and changed, and a lot of it sometimes is due to the blood of Jesus. But we don't, like, do a lot of these things anymore. But there are some things in there that we should pay attention to because they are still for us. A lot of the Old Testament, especially Leviticus and all of that, gets dismissed because it's outdated, it's ancient, it's for Israel only and all that. And that's right. God sent Jesus to fulfill these requirements and these rules that we see in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and even Deuteronomy. So that's why Jesus said, I've come to fulfill the law, meaning that he came to do what was required of the law so he could be the sacrifice for us. So then we can be under this new covenant in a way, this new law. But that doesn't mean that there isn't stuff that God said to Israel that is still helpful to us and that is still still readily for us to try and follow. So all of that being said, I want to look at something specific here in Leviticus 16. It's called the Day of Atonement. And back in Exodus 12, we saw God lay out special instructions for what was called the Passover. And in the Passover, it was that final plague of Egypt where the death of the firstborn and the angel of death would pass over any door that had the blood on it. And he gave instructions for a sacrifice that it had to be young, no defects, and no broken bones. and they had other things, but God would use that, and so they would be passed over if they had that stuff. So now in the Day of Atonement, though, God was trying to find a way to atone for sin. And up until now, like, people were kind of taking that on, this punishment for sin, because something has to die to cover up sin. The wages for sin is death, as Romans 3:23 tells us. The wages of sin is death. That's actually Romans 6:23. One of them. Sorry, I'm getting kind of confused, but that's okay. And so the wages for sin is death. The payment for sin is death. And so when we look at that, up until now, God wiped out the earth in the time of Noah with a flood to cover up and take care of the sin problem, right? When Adam and Eve sinned at the end of Genesis 3, God says that he made garments for them, meaning that he had to sacrifice some of the animals in the garden to make clothing for Adam and Eve who had sinned. Now, let's fast forward. Now God, and even at the golden calf story, where he made them drink the golden calf that they had made, and some of the Israelites even died from worshiping that golden calf. So now God is bringing in this sacrifice system known as the Day of Atonement, that kind of echoes back to the requirements and the rules of the Passover lamb. And now he's putting it in here in this event called the Day of Atonement, where Aaron, the high priest, could go in to the Holy of Holies. So now we've got, or the most holy place, as some translations describe it, but that's a part of the tabernacle where God dwelled. And as we know, where God dwells, the people can't be. Right? When God came down on Mount Sinai, Moses was instructed to put a barrier around the base of the mountain. Don't let them touch it or they'll die. They can't be in my presence. And same thing with Adam and Eve. Like, they couldn't be in the presence of God because they had sin, and sin can't be in his presence. He's too holy for that. The burning bush, God told Moses to back off because you can't be any closer to me. You can't be where I am. We're sinful. We can't be in the presence of God. So to enter the Holy of Holies, to enter the most holy place, Aaron had to do a whole bunch of stuff, which is described here. And we're going to look at this in Leviticus 16. We're going to read verses 1 through 14. And then we're going to kind of move away from this a little bit. But I wanted to kind of look at this. And this event then would be for the cleansing of the sins of Israel. And so let's begin. And it says in verse 1, Leviticus 16, verse 1, it says, The Lord spoke to Moses after the death of Aaron's two sons. And then verse 2, it says, the Lord said to Moses, warn your brother Aaron not to enter the most holy place behind the inner curtain whenever he chooses. If he does, he will die. For the ark's cover, the place of atonement is there, and I myself am present in a cloud above the atonement cover. So God was present behind that curtain. And we're going to see that come to light in just a little bit. Then it says, when Aaron enters the sanctuary, he must follow these instructions fully. He must bring a young bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. He must put on his linen and then his undergarments worn next to his body. He must tie the linen sash around his waist and put a linen turban on his head. These are sacred garments, so he must bathe himself before he puts them on. Aaron must take from the community of Israel two male goats for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. Aaron will present his own bull as a sin offering to purify himself and his family, making them right with the Lord. Then he must take two male goats and present them to the Lord at the entrance of the tabernacle. He is to cast sacred lots to determine which goat will be reserved for an offering to the Lord and which will carry the sins of the people out into the wilderness. Aaron then will present as a sin offering the chosen goat the goat chosen by lot for the Lord. The other, the escape goat chosen by lot, will be sent away, will be kept alive, standing before the Lord. When it is sent away in the wilderness, the people will be purified and made right with the Lord. Then they go on to say some other, but I wanted to read verse 14. Then Aaron must take some of the blood of the bull, dip his finger in it, and sprinkle it on the east side of the atonement cover. He must sprinkle the blood 7 times with his finger in front of the atonement cover. Okay, and there's a lot more to it, but that's just what Aaron had to do in order to not drop dead before the Lord. You know, he had to burn incense and stuff like that to kind of once again provide a smoke screen and stuff like that while he was in the holy place, while he was in the Holy of Holies, and he had to do all of this. And 7 is important. That's the number of completion in the Bible. It's the number of perfection. It's kind of like the number of finish, right? It's the end, like doing it 7 times. Jesus spoke 7 times from the cross, like all of these different things. And you kind of look in the Bible and you kind of see these things. 7 kind of pops up a lot in there. So it's good to kind of know that. But that's why it says 7 times. It's a specific number on purpose. So that's kind of the book of Leviticus here. As we look at, as we continue to look at this stuff, I want to draw your attention to Numbers 13 now as we kind of go toward the book of Numbers. But not to kind of make a sharp cut there at the book of Leviticus, this Day of Atonement was a big deal. And this Day of Atonement was God purifying Israel. But this Day of Atonement would be finalized for the last time with the death of Jesus. Jesus was the final Passover lamb, the final Day of Atonement, if you will, the Day of Atonement that is now and forever. And Jesus was treated that same way. And as I said, he came to fulfill the law that the people of Israel couldn't fulfill, which is why they needed an annual Day of Atonement, right? And our Day of Atonement came through Jesus, right? Where he went he lived the life that we can't live. He died on the cross. He was a lamb without defect. He didn't have any sin, no blemishes, not in the way that they thought about it back then, right? A lamb, no defects or blemishes, meaning it couldn't be missing a chunk of its wool. It couldn't have any like warts or anything like that. It couldn't limp. It had to be without defect in that way. So in saying all of that, God, then Jesus was that way, but his bones weren't broken, but he lived this perfect life that we couldn't live to be the sacrifice for our sins. And they didn't break any of his bones. So that's kind of what that's calling forward to. So for years and centuries and all of that, the people of Israel did the Day of Atonement until that day Jesus died on the cross, and he atoned for all sins, past, present, and future. That is what Jesus did. That's why it kind of, it's important to know that. So now if you read Jesus's story, you can kind of see these kind of things pop out. They didn't break his bones. They didn't, he didn't have sin and all of those things. So as I said, Numbers 14 is where we're going to read a little bit from, but Numbers 13 and 14 is what I'm getting ready to reference now. But the book of Numbers was also, as I said already, written by Moses and is written to Israel. But this is the theme of the book of Numbers. It was because the Israelites are unwilling to enter the land of Canaan, the entire generation is forced to wander in the desert of Sinai for 40 years. So this is kind of what I wanted to talk about. Now, they send a scouting report to the Promised Land, and they get punished for their faithlessness. In Numbers 13, we see they go back, right? They go into the Promised Land and they explore it, but they see this in Numbers 13, verse 27, and it says, this was their report to Moses. We entered the land you let us explore, and it is indeed a bountiful country, flowing with milk and honey. Here is the kind of fruit it produces. But the people there are powerful, and their towns are large and fortified. We even saw giants there. And so now, the people were like, No, we can't do that. There's giants. We'll be crushed like grasshoppers. But Caleb and Joshua, and it's important to know, Caleb and Joshua actually believed that they could do it. They believed that they could be important enough that God was with them to conquer the people that were in the promised land. Joshua and Caleb believed that, but the people were like, no, we can't do it. We can't go in there. We can't conquer these people. We can't do it. So because of that, because of their faithlessness, because they didn't have faith, even after all they've seen, and sometimes like we give Israel a hard time, we give the Israelites a hard time. I find myself often kind of like, well, that's stupid after all they've seen. But then I call back to myself, and after all that I've seen God do, and even in the Bible, and even what he's done in my life, what he's done through other people's lives, I sit here and I say the same thing. Well, Israel could have just, why didn't they remember? Well, why don't I remember? And sometimes why don't we remember that God has done so many things for us? Up until this point, Israel has seen God walk them out of Egypt through a bunch of plagues. God's seen him part the Red Sea. God has provided them manna and quail to eat, given them water from a rock, which is important. We're going to talk about that in just a second. And now they can't conquer this land because there's giants in there. But notice the scouting report started with, it's a land flowing with milk and honey, just like God said. There's produce, there's everything. Like, it's a bountiful land. And so it's important to remember that. And this is what the Lord does. Numbers 14, verse 26. Then the Lord said to Moses, "How long must I put up with this wicked community and its complaints about me? Yes, I have heard the complaints the Israelites are making against me. Now tell them this: as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do to you the very things I heard you say. You will drop dead in this wilderness because you complain against me. Every one of you who is 20 years old or older and was included in the registration will die. You will not enter and occupy the land I swore to give you. The only exceptions will be Caleb and Joshua." So now they're going to wander in this wilderness until they said, until like God said, they drop dead. So an entire generation is going to be killed off. They're going to wander in the for 40 days. I mean, sorry, for 40 years. And it says, "I have spoken, I, the Lord, have spoken. I will certainly do these things to every member of the community who has conspired against me. They will be destroyed in the wilderness." And I am sad to hear this, right? For the people of Israel, they've come so far. They came out of slavery in Egypt, and they are now going to wander in the desert for 40 years because they didn't believe God could do it. They didn't believe who was with them. And it just echoes in my head, this whole situation. And as I see, I'm kind of searching for the words to say, because I'm in this space with them, and I don't know if you are too, but imagine going all this way and hearing about this land that God has promised to Abraham, and you hear that for generations and generations, and now you're standing pretty much there on the threshold of going into the promised land, the land that God had promised you, and now, because you don't believe God can handle a few giants, because you don't believe God can help you take down these fortified cities, now all of a sudden you can't enter that land that you've waited to enter. You're standing right there and you can't enter it. And sometimes I wonder, for me especially, maybe for you, how we stand right at the threshold of something that God has promised us, or a dream or a goal or something like that. We're standing right there. And we miss it because we don't have enough faith in God. We don't have enough trust in God yet. After all that he's done. Because that's what God, why God punishes them. God takes them out of the promised land because they didn't have enough faith to trust him to handle what they saw as problems in the promised land. And Moses suffers the same kind of fate. As the leader of these people, we've been tracking him since Exodus 3. Well, really, since the beginning of the book of Exodus, but really Exodus 3 is when his journey to the promised land started. And we've been following him as he deals with Pharaoh and he sees what God can do. And he sees what God can do when he parts the Red Sea, when he gives them manna and quail and water from the rock, right? Like all of this stuff that God has done with Moses, and we've journeyed with Moses. Primarily a lot more with Moses than we have with Israel. And this is what happens to Moses. The Israelites are complaining again. And God tells him in verse 8, it says, you and Aaron must, I'm sorry, we're in Numbers chapter 20 now. So if you want to kind of get ahead there and get him there in verse 8, and we're going to see kind of an event that kind of comes back around. And it's something that God already did. And now God is asking him to do it again. So Numbers chapter 20, verse 8, it says, you and Aaron must take the staff and assemble the entire community. As the people watch, speak to the rock over there, and I will pour out water. You will have enough water from the rock to satisfy the whole community and their livestock. So Moses did as he was told, kind of. That I added those words. Moses did as he was told, and he took the staff from the place where it was kept before the Lord, and he summoned Aaron and the people to come. And he said, listen, you rebels, he shouted. Must we bring water from this rock? We being him and Aaron. Then he raised his hand and he struck the rock twice with the staff, and water gushed out, so the entire community had their fill. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not trust me enough to demonstrate my holiness to the people of Israel, you will not lead them into the land I am giving them. And once again, my heart breaks. After all of what Moses had gone through, like when I'm reading this story, I'm in the space with them as we've been journeying here. And it's just like I read that, and it's just like, after all that Moses had been through with these people, after all that Moses had done for these people, after all that Moses had seen God do for these people, after all that God had done for Moses, a simple thing and speak and strike. God had told Moses back, we saw it in the book of Exodus, to speak to the rock and water came out. And this is the same exact command, but this time he strikes the rock. Showing his anger and his frustration with the people, maybe a little bit of trust and faith. Because what if the water doesn't come out of the rock? Then these people are going to be standing there. But Moses loses the promised land, and I can't help but my heart can't help but break for him. And we're going to look a little bit more into that in just a second as we go into Deuteronomy, but I want to stay right here for just a second, and I want to encourage you. Like maybe you've seen other people where they get right up to something and something happens by their choice, and it just hurts, because it's kind of like you were so close and you made some choices and some decisions, and now all of a sudden you're not getting to that goal, you're not getting to that dream, you're not getting there to that promised land because you made a choice. Maybe it's your own kids, and maybe you're like trying to encourage them. You're trying to tell them, hey, like it'll work. Like you just have to keep going. And they make a decision and something happens it's not something bad, but like something happens. Maybe they didn't study for a test and you tried to encourage them to do that, and they had a dream or a goal to get like an A on the test, and because of their lack of studying, they got a C, and it's like, and you can just see the hurt on their face because they didn't achieve that goal. Or maybe it's like a money goal that your kids had, or maybe it's something else, life choices that you see them making, and you just encourage them to not do it, and they do, and they wind up having like a rough patch in life, and it just breaks your heart. And now, like, even in our own life, like, we can't see it sometimes, but maybe like we've stepped close, and we've tried, and we get right up there, and we make a decision that pulls us away, takes us a different route, because we didn't trust God. That's what this all is about. This moment in time with Israel is their trust and their faith in God. We've used this theme through the whole series. God keeps his promises, but we must remain faithful and obedient even when the future doesn't seem clear. We must remain faithful to him even when the future isn't clear, because faithfulness to God's plans, to God's dreams, will be rewarded. So have continued faith. And that's been our long growing theme over the last several months. And we see this now as Israel has been struggling with that. And Moses even struggled with that. And now both sets have lost the promised land. At least this generation of Israel has lost the promised land. So now as we go into the book of Deuteronomy, we're going to see some new things come up. We're going to see a new leader get picked to lead the new generation of Israel into the promised land. And we're going to kind of see what God does for Moses. And we're going to kind of see that conversation, which will once again kind of hurt your heart a little bit. But we're going to dive into that here. So let's get into the book of Deuteronomy. So grab that Bible if you still have it handy there. And we'll be in Deuteronomy chapter 5 to start off with here as we go into this book. And basically, once again, Deuteronomy authored by Moses. And its audience is Israel, but the new generation of Israel. And the theme of the book is Moses does a series of farewell messages and addresses to the new generation of Israelites as they live as obedient people in the promised land. And so now basically what this is, and the location of the book, they're standing on the edge of the promised land. So this is kind of in the same general area, Mount Sinai, but now they're kind of on the edge of the promised land where they've been wandering, kind of. And they're standing on the edge of, he's unable to enter it himself, but he's delivering this message to these new people that are going to be going in there. And Deuteronomy means second law. So much of the book repeats the earlier laws given in Exodus and Leviticus. And it summarizes what happened ever since they departed from Sinai. He's turning to these new people and calls them to be obedient to God's law in Deuteronomy 4. The purpose is to draw attention to the central message of the Sinai narratives, which are found in Exodus 19 to 33, where they spent time there. He also lays the foundation of the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy 5, and he is in their need for relationship with God and fear. Let's read that again. And then Moses draws inference that the central to Israel's relationship with God is the need for fear and love. And then it's these new instructions for living in the promised land, and that's seen in Deuteronomy 12 through 26. And these instructions focus on all aspects of lives, such as worship, leadership, and the affairs of everyday life. And then stern punishments will follow if these laws aren't met if they fail to meet these laws. And that's all kind of spelled out throughout the whole book. And then the book kind of ends where we're kind of going to look at with that they will need to be have a pure heart. Have a new heart. They will need to love God. They will need to keep his commands. They will need to walk in his ways. But they need that new heart, and that's important. And then as Moses is getting ready to die and pass on, new leadership is put in place, and Moses kind of gives his blessing. He has a song, and we kind of look at the final stages of his life as he moves Israel into this new season with Joshua as their leader, and all of that kind of stuff. And so now we're going to read a few things. We're going to, as I said, we're in Deuteronomy chapter 5. So we're going to go there, and we're going to, I know we did a couple weeks ago, but as I said in that episode, it's important to revisit these commandments, these 10 commandments. And so it said, Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 5, and it says, I stood as an intermediary between you and the Lord, for you were afraid of the fire and did not want to approach the mountain. He spoke to me, and I passed his words on to you, and this is what he said, I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of slavery. You must not have any other God before me. You must not make for yourself an idol of any kind or any image of anything in the heavens or on the earth or in the sea. You must not bow down and worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, will not tolerate your affection to any other gods. I lay the sins of the parents upon their children, for the entire family is affected, even the children of third and fourth generations of those who have rejected me. But I lavish an unfailing love for 1,000 generations on those who love me and obey my commands. You must not misuse the name of the Lord your God. This will not go unpunished. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord has commanded you. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath and dedicated to rest. We talked about that a little bit, how God establishes that very early on in Genesis 2, his idea of rest and how important it is, not just for the Sabbath day, not just for church or time with him or any of that. It's important for us as a human being, and we see Jesus even rest in his time on earth. So it's important. On that day, no one in your household may work. This includes your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, your oxen, your donkey, all of that stuff. And so it's just a remembering. Verse 16, it says, honor your father and your mother as the Lord commanded you. Then you will live a long, full life in the land God is giving you. You must not murder. You must not commit adultery, steal. You must not testify falsely against your neighbor. You must not covet your neighbor's wife. You must not covet your neighbor's house or land. Basically, be happy with what you got, right? And so, as we read those all again, those are important things. And these are one of the things that, as I said earlier, that God has in these books that people kind of dismiss, these Ten Commandments. But the thing is Jesus hinted at all of these in his ministry and how important they are. So as we continue to look, now, as I said, we've got this new leadership coming in. Now, there's a lot that happens here in the book of Deuteronomy in all of them. And as I've said before, this isn't meant to be like an in-depth look at this stuff. Okay? I'm not doing that right now. If you can read them on your own and stuff, but I'm kind of trying to find our thread and just kind of go through these books. So fast forward, let's go to Deuteronomy 31, and we're going to see this change in leadership. Now, as I said, this is taking place right here as they're getting ready to go into the Promised Land. And as I've said, Moses doesn't get to go in there. And Moses knows that this generation of people under the leadership of Joshua, is getting ready to go into that promised land. A couple years ago, we did a series called The Last Night with Jesus. And when we talked about Jesus' final words and some of his, like, probably his best teaching, his more passionate teaching is in John chapters 13 through 17, where he's in his last hours. And Moses here, I think, is the same kind of thing. Moses is really trying to get these his last and final words as leader of the nation of Israel to set these people up for the best success they can. And as I read earlier, we'll be in Deuteronomy 31, verse 1, and it says, when Moses had finished giving these instructions. So now we've kind of encapsulated the book, right? And so now we started with the main instructions, right? The Ten Commandments. And now he's given all these instructions for what we said, leadership, right living, all of that stuff. And we're now in to the end where he said, now all of these instructions are done. And verse 2, he says, I am now 120 years old and I am no longer able to lead you. The Lord told me, you will not cross the Jordan River, but the Lord your God himself will cross over ahead of you, and he will destroy the nations living there, and you will take possession of the land, and Joshua will lead you across the river. And so now he's talking about all of this, and this is where we first hear this phrase. And it says, in verse 6, it says, so be strong and courageous and do not be afraid and do not panic before them. For the Lord your God will personally go ahead of you, and he will never fail or abandon you. Then Moses called for Joshua as all of Israel watched, said to him, be strong and courageous, for you will lead these people into the land the Lord swore to them. You are the one who will divide it among their, you are the one who will divide it among them as their grants of land. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord will personally go ahead of you. He is with you, and he will never fail you or abandon you. As we keep hearing that echo through this whole thing, that was a big theme that we saw, that God is with him. God goes ahead of them. In a series that we did called Known, we talked about how God goes before us and behind us. And all these series I'm referencing, you can find on our website, thepointoffocus.com, and you can go and check those out. But this is a common theme here, especially since the book of Exodus. Like, he goes before you and behind you, and he's with you, and he's there, and he will not leave you and not abandon you. Because a lot of the times when I read stuff like this, we think that God has left us, but in reality, we have gone off track and we have made decisions and choices, and we're not where God has us to be. I mean, I'm pretty sure Israel got upset. We're out here wandering in the desert. See, we said it would happen, Moses, because they'd been complaining about dying in the desert to begin with, and now those same people are dying in the desert because they got off track from where God had them. So, now jumping ahead a little bit to Deuteronomy 33, and it says that, this is the blessing of Moses, Deuteronomy 33:1. This is the blessing of Moses, the man of God, that he gave to the people of Israel before his death. And that's all in there. So he blesses Israel. What a big heart for God and for the nation of Israel as he blesses them, and he still wants what's best for them. He still wants them to be the best people that they can be because of his passion for them to succeed. And it's just, even though he's not going with them, even though the people that he actually led out of Egypt are dead and gone, and these are a new batch of people, this new generation, he still has a heart and wants them to succeed, even if he's not going to get what they're getting, even if he's not going to get the opportunity to go into the promised land. And now we're going to jump ahead to Deuteronomy 34. And this is where the time for Moses comes to an end. And we're going to start next week our series in the book of Joshua called Strong. And we're going to see some things. We're going to see a different kind of Israel as they journey into the promised land. We're going to see some different things. They still have their ups and downs, but we're going to see a different kind of Israel. And so let's read Deuteronomy 34, verse 1. It says, "Then Moses went up to Mount Nebo, up from the plains of Moab, and which crossed from Jericho. And the Lord showed him the whole land, from Gilead to as far as Dan, from the land of Naphtali to the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, and the land of Judah, extending to the Mediterranean Sea." And he goes through a whole bunch of other things. The Negev, the Jordan Valley with Jericho, the city of palms. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'This is the land I promised an oath to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. When I said, I will give this to your descendants, I have not allowed you to see it with your own eyes, but you will not enter the land.'" And so God is taking Moses, so at least Moses at least gets to see. And I don't know if it's God kind of like, "See, this is what you had." You know, I don't know if God sometimes shows us like what we could have had if we would have just stayed with him, if we'd have just kept going with him. And I know sometimes he does that because we finally get to where we're going. It was kind of like, "Oh, if I'd have just done that a long time ago, that'd have been better." But now Moses, I don't think it's God kind of like, "See, Moses, this is what you could have had." I don't think it's kind of like a punishment thing. I think it's just God showing mercy. As I read this and as I think about it, I think it's God showing Moses a little bit of mercy. Be like, "Hey, you can't enter this, but I did like make a promise that this is the land that you, so I want you to see it. I want you to at least be able to see it." Instead of just kind of leaving him in the dark, I think this is God showing a little bit of mercy. "Hey, you know, you can't enter it, Moses, but you can see it." This isn't God going, "Ha ha, look at that, like, this is what you could have had." That's not the heartbeat of God, I don't think, in this moment. I kind of always thought about it that way until now, when you're kind of looking on this lens that we're looking at. I don't think that's what God's heart was for this. I think it was God just kind of like, "Hey, I want you to see it." Because God is rich in unfailing love. He said that in the Ten Commandments, and he's of goodness and mercy. And he wants Moses to at least get to see the promised land. Let's jump down to verse 7, and it says, Moses was 120 years old when he died. Yet his eyesight was clear, and he was as strong as ever. The people of Israel mourned for Moses on the plains of Moab for 30 days, until the customary period of mourning was over. Now Joshua was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid hands on him. And so the people of Israel obeyed him, doing just as the Lord commanded Moses. There never has been another prophet in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. The Lord sent him to perform all these miraculous signs and wonders in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants, and his entire land. With mighty power, Moses performed these terrifying acts in the sight of all of Israel. So it's kind of like a good but sad ending in this chapter of this Journey to the Promised Land series, this chapter of Moses, this chapter in Israel's time. And God has given them a new leader and in Joshua. And as we're going to see as we go through our next series called Strong, we're going to see exactly what they accomplish and what they do, this new generation. And my heart for this episode is that we'll see that God is with us, that we'll lean into what they said in Deuteronomy 31. If we get anything out of this, like, I know I've said a lot, and there's been a lot of historical, a lot of filler, a lot of like what's going on here and there, but I believe God wants us to achieve our goals. That's been in our, God has got plans for us, right? Jeremiah 29:11, it's in our theme through it, that's kind of built and we built on, and it's grown. God's dreams will be rewarded. We've got to have faith, this continued faithfulness. And as we see, here as Israel went through the story through Leviticus and Exodus, Leviticus and Numbers, their roller coaster ride of faith and then no faith, and then like the one moment here caused them to not enter the promised land. It caused Moses to not enter the promised land. The faith and trusting God is important if we want to achieve those goals. But if I could leave you with just one thing, and then this episode is done, and we'll dive into Joshua next week. But I want to read Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6. It says, "Be strong and courageous, and do not be afraid. Do not panic before them. Do not panic before our giants. Do not panic before our problems. Do not panic in these moments of anxious thoughts and all these other things that the devil kind of bombards us with. Do not be anxious and do not panic before them. For the Lord your God will personally go ahead of you, and he will neither fail you nor abandon you." I hope that verse encourages you. Take that verse with you. Deuteronomy 31:6. Don't panic before our problems. Don't panic when things don't seem clear. Because God is a God that keeps his promises. And we just have to remain faithful to him, even when things don't seem clear. And faithfulness to God's dreams and God's plans will be rewarded. So we got to have continued faith. I'll see you next week.